Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today I'm going to try something a little bit different. I am what we in the business like to call a very slow deck builder. Something you may not know about me, it takes me a long time to assemble a deck. Just going from basic concept to a workable skeleton, that can take over a week if I'm doing a really good job, sometimes even more. The deck I'm probably best known for is my Malcolm and Kedis Polyhorn deck, one of the decks that I've gotten onto the CEDH deck database. And that one took about 6 to 7 weeks before I was even in a place where I could really paper it out and playtest the deck more extensively than I was doing with just goldfishing on Moxfield. Now, what I would like to try to do is become a bit of a quicker deck builder. And to do that, I have taken a cue from some creators who I really admire. Several months ago, Rebel Sun put out a video where she attempted to do a lightning build of a commander that had intrigued her, and in the space of 10 minutes, she wanted to try to assemble a deck start to finish. I'm not quite sure I can do 10 minutes, but I would like to try to improve over this whole 1 week thing. In addition, MJ at MTG in Quarantine has been doing a number of different lightning builds with various creators and members of the community who he hosts on his podcast, MTG in Quarantine. Again, it seems like a really fun exercise, but instead of me just going in with a random commander to try to build, I actually had a commander and an interaction I was interested in exploring. So come with me while I attempt to do I won't call it a lightning build, but how about a reasonable brew time on a commander and an interaction that I'm very interested in. What I'm interested in exploring, as you can see here, is the commander Lavinia Azorius Renegade and the enchantment Dream Halls. So Lavinia is 1 white and 1 blue mana for a 2/2 legendary creature human soldier, with each opponent can't cast non-creature spells with a converted mana value greater than the number of lands that player controls, and whenever an opponent casts a spell, if no mana was spent to cast it, counter that spell. The reason why Lavinia has been in my head recently is not just I listened to a lot of Mind Sculptor's episodes, shout out to Callahan, but also the card Dream Halls came up recently while I was looking through some cards, and Dream Halls is a fascinating enchantment. 3 blue-blue for an enchantment which reads, instead of paying the casting cost for a spell of any color, its caster may choose and discard a card that shares at least one color with that spell. If the spell is X and its casting cost, X is 0. Let's do a little bit more modern of a read of that card, I guess. So on Moxfield, you'll go over and click View Card Details, and it'll bring up the actual Oracle text. So rather than pay the mana cost for a spell, its controller may discard a card that shares a color with that spell. Now the reason this is interesting is Dream Halls lets you cheat on mana costs. That is already an exceptionally powerful thing to be doing in Commander, particularly in CDH. But the downside to it is that if you play Dream Halls, you are basically inviting your opponents to dunk on you with the value that they're going to get off of it after you just sunk a card and 5 mana into casting the spell. Now the upside to it is that you're going to get the first crack on it since you're the one whose main phase it is currently in. So presumably if you have some cards in hand, you can discard 1 or 2 cards and play 1 or 2 big haymaker cards. What Lavinia enables us to do is, since Dream Halls is letting players cast a spell without paying mana to cast it, we counter that spell. Essentially, Lavinia's stacks effect is being used to turn Dream Halls into a one-sided effect for us. Now, ultimately, I would like to see if this is viable in CEDH. I'm not 100% sure if it is or not, but I'm interested in exploring it. So, over the next few minutes, you're going to come along on this journey with me as I try to build out this deck. So, the traditional Lavinia deck is going to make use of cards like Omen Machine as a hard lock. So, Omen Machine is an artifact, it is 6 mana, players can't draw cards, and at the beginning of each player's draw step, that player exiles the top card of his or her library. If it's a land card, that player puts it onto the battlefield, otherwise they can cast it without paying its mana cost. The idea being that once we lock Omen Machine onto the field and get people to empty their hands, they are now hellbent and no longer have cards in hand, and we try to win from there. I'm not sure that plays very well with what we are trying to do with Dream Halls with this deck, so it may be a card we wind up excluding. So what options do we have in blue and white to try to take advantage of what's going on? I think I will start with a Stax package that I would feel comfortable running, and that's going to start with Rule of Law. There is a blue version of Rule of Law that we can run too called Arcane Laboratory. And we can run the variants on it, including... I'm already blanking on card names. I'm off to a good start. Well, let's put in the ones that I do remember offhand. So we have Deafening Silence. We can also run Aethersworn Canonist. And I'm going to change this printing to one that has a black border because the white border bothers me. Sorry, OCD. It happens. It's a thing. And, of course, Archon of Emeria. Is going to start us out with a pretty healthy 5 Stax effects, a Rule of Law Stax in particular. So even in the event that somebody is able to remove our Lavinia after we resolve Dream Halls, they are still going to be limited in the amount of value that they can have because they remove it, they've just opened the floodgates for their opponents to start casting spells off of Dream Halls. We're also going to want to be able to find Dream Halls. So we're going to start with Enlightened Tutor. Again, white border, stop giving that to me. Here we go, black border, that feels better. I'm not sure if Idyllic Tutor is right for this deck or not, but I would like to be able to find Dream Halls a little bit more consistently. And also don't think it's right for the deck, but I'm going to put in a Moonblessed Cleric. So Moonblessed Cleric is 2 and a white for a 3-2 Human Elf Cleric with... When it enters the battlefield, you can search your library for an enchantment card, reveal it, put it on top of your library. And we are also going to want to get here Academy Rector. So Academy Rector is a classic from all the way back in Urza's block. 1, 2, 4, 3 and a white with a... She is a human cleric with when she is put into... When she dies, you can remove it from the game. If you do, search your library for an enchantment card, put that card into play, then shuffle your library. Blue doesn't offer a lot of ways to get enchantments into play, unfortunately, so we don't have a whole lot that we can get there. But blue does give us Spellseeker as a way for us to get Enlightened Tutor if we're going to be trying to go that way. Potentially, we could also do something in blue-white with some flickering, but I'm not quite willing to go down that path yet. I'm not too happy with our Stax package quite yet. We need a little bit more. We're going to want to be able to interact with Dockside Extortionist and a lot of the treasure synergies. So on that note, I don't think this is going to be a Stony Silence deck. I think we still need to be able to make use of artifacts ourselves. So Blind Obedience, I think, goes in as a pretty powerful Stax piece. I've talked about this before in our episode on Kismets. 1 and a white for a enchantment with Extort. And artifacts and creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped. Forcing treasures to come into play tapped is exceedingly powerful, and this has been a card that has been a thorn in my side playing my Malcolm Kettis deck, which relies on treasures to be able to combo off. I think we also put in Cursed Totem. There are a lot of decks that are trying to break parity on Rule of Law effects by leaning into activated abilities. And Cursed Totem offers us an ability to still make use of some of the best of our cards without necessarily opening it up to opponents. So Cursed Totem, I think, is going to go in. On one hand, I'm kind of interested in running Stax pieces that are also going to tax, like Thalia. But I'm not sure how it's going to play alongside of Dream Halls. I think for now I'm going to put them in. So we're going to run the 2-mana Thalia. I'm very glad she got a reprint recently and it brought that cost down a little bit. We also are going to run Gilded Drake. Just too good not to, since we're going to be on a creature plan. So at this point, I'm pausing because I am trying to decide what our next additions are going to be. We're still fairly limited in our ability to find dream halls, so we're going to want to get some card advantage. So if we're playing CDH, we want Mystic Remora. We want Rhystic Study. Let's see, what else can we do here? I don't think this is going to be a deck that is going to want to lean on artifacts. I may be making an episode that Callahan from the Mind Sculptors would be happy to see Lavinia in, but I don't think I can squeeze Arden into this build as well, so I think that is out. I'm going to come back to the Enchantment Suite later, as I have some ideas that we may be able to lean on that even further for more value. But for now, I'm going to start adding some key interaction. So let's be on Swords to Plowshares. Let's get on Path to Exile. People will sometimes question Path to Exile in CDH, but the number of players who actually run a large number of basics is fairly minimal. And if I'm taking out something that is directly hindering my game plan, I would like to be able to do so, even if it means I give somebody a land. That does work a little bit against Lavinia, so this may wind up being a cut later. But what would not be a cut is Winds of Abandon. This is essentially a one-sided Wrath that acts like Path to Exile, one and a white for a sorcery. Exile target creature you don't control. For each creature exiled this way, its controller searches their library for a basic. Those players put those cards onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle their libraries. The reason it's worded like that is it overload for 4 white-white. Still a sorcery, but it can be a very powerful way to remove a lot of creatures, and in CDH, people are not running enough basics in order to get their value back off of that. Also going to put in a Cyclonic Rift. All-star in CDH, all-star in regular Commander. Another stacks piece I haven't put in yet, but should put in here is Dranith Magistrate, which has 2 ends in it, not 1. You can tell how much white stacks I play in CDH, which is 0 at the moment. That's going to be a good start to our stacks package so far. We got a little bit of interaction for our counter spells. We're going to be running Swansong. We're going to be on Force of Will. We're going to be on probably Force of Negation. I could see this deck kind of being a classic blue-white control type of deck, where we are going to play Draw-Go Magic. We're going to try to land a value engine, accrue our value, use the Dream Halls to essentially allow us to play a card, keep all of our mana untapped, grow our hand, and then just overwhelm opponents with card advantage. We're also going to want to be on, I think Flusterstorm is still in this deck. I would want to have more interaction. I think Dovin's Veto is still a good card. In higher colored lists, it sometimes gets crowded out, but the ability to have what is essentially a negate that can't be countered is relatively strong. Silence is also a good way for us to just get our value engines and protect them when we are trying to cast them out. And I think we also, on that note, want to be on Esper Sentinel, just as another value piece to force our opponents to pay a little bit of extra mana to have their game plan. And if we're running Esper Sentinel, I want to be on Ranger Captain of Eos. A way to tutor up our Esper Sentinel and be able to just get a little bit more value as a silence effect later on when we need it. So at the moment, I'm liking the idea of going into that blue-white draw-go style of control, but I don't really have enough value engines in the early game between Esper Sentinel, Mystic Remora, Rhystic Study that doesn't really feel quite like enough for now. Gonna need to fill that out a little bit more, and I'm gonna have to come back to those. In terms of tutors to get Dream Halls, we have Idyllic Tutor, we have a long line with Spellseeker getting Enlightened Tutor, which is another one of our main tutors to get it. Spellseeker does allow us to get in there and reach our destination eventually, though. I'm gonna fill out the classic artifact ramp. I don't think this is going to run either Omen Machine or Knowledge Pool, which are the two traditional Lavinia locks. And you'll sometimes see this combined with one of the various Teferis. So I think it is Teferi... Let's just take a look at all of them. If you didn't know, Moxfield has the ability to do what is essentially a Scryfall search by using the search bar. And since I don't always remember the names of all the cards that I'm looking at... Yeah, Teferi Time Raveler is the one who I was thinking of, who would allow you to perform a hard lock with Lavinia. The downside to it is that opponents can only cast spells when they can cast a sorcery, means you are the one stuck on table police. And I don't think that is a very viable situation to be in CEDH. So we're definitely not done building the deck yet, but I know that I'm excluding some powerful cards. So what I will often do is I will go to the CEDH decklist database and I will look at similar cards in these colors. So why not just look directly at the other Lavinia deck that is on the database? This is the Omen Pool deck, one of the ones that Callahan and Phoenix are authors on. So looking at cards that I'm obviously missing, which I need to fix, Archmage Emeritus is a very potent way for us to draw additional cards. I think that's going to go right into our version of the deck. I'm probably going to want Wandering Archaic for now. Wandering Archaic is really strong in CEDH because that ability of whenever an opponent casts an instant or sorcery spell, they may pay two. If they don't, we get the copy, which resolves before they get to make their copy, or before they get to resolve their original spell. It is essentially a potent tax effect that we can draw a lot of value off of. With Archmage Emeritus in our deck, we're going to want to make sure that we are getting a lot of value off of it. So we're going to want to have a pretty hefty instant sorcery suite, which fits very well alongside what we are trying to do already with a little bit of blue-white draw-go control. So our comparison then to the deck on the database, we also see here we have our pretty consistent and common cantrip effects with Gitaxian Probe and Ponder. We see some real powerful land destruction with Armageddon. Brainstorm, not a surprise. Counterspell, not a surprise. Rift. Dig Through Time would probably be a very good fit. Fierce Guardianship was the other free counterspell that for some reason I was not thinking of. Now the thing we're going to try to take advantage of with this deck is that a lot of the cards that we're going to include in the Instant and Sorcery Suite are cards that we will be able to pitch later to our Dream Halls in order to get some big value. So while we're on that note, let's take a pause and let's insert some big value creatures. One of my first decks that I got to play when I came into CEDH was a Sultai deck with Tasigur the Golden Fang at the head. This deck attempted to use Tasigur to Eldritch Evolution out a card called Nezahal. And this could be a phenomenal endgame piece. So Nezahal is 5 blue-blue for a legendary creature Elder Dinosaur. It can't be countered, no maximum hand size. Whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, draw a card. Discard 3 cards, exile Nezahal, return to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So a potent value engine that can't be countered and is very difficult for your opponents to interact with. Not sure it's going to make the final cut, but it is one of those big-time value engines. I would love to be able to get Consecrated Sphinx into this list. It's not one that sees a lot of play in CDH, but it can draw so many darn cards, and it represents a clock in the late game too. I don't want to just have blue spells to pitch. I would like to be able to pitch white spells as well, and Elesh Norn is a really brutal card to be able to land on the battlefield. Giving your opponent's creatures -2/-2 and your creatures +2/+2 is backbreaking. There are a lot of decks, such as my Malcolm and Kedis deck, which literally just can't win through a Elesh Norn being on the battlefield. And if I could land that, I would be a pretty happy guy. Now, as far as some other big Haymaker white spells that we could do, I'll put Armageddon in for now. but I'm not sure it's going to wind up staying in the deck. Oh, white border, get out of here. Shout out to all the folks who are big fans of white border, who I am sure I am triggering as I am going through and removing all these white borders from my deck. Let's put in a few of those cantrips that we saw the database deck running. So we're going to run Banestorm, we're going to run Ponder, we're going to run Gitaxian Probe. We are looking probably to cut most, or if not all of these, if possible, if we need to later on. I think the deck wants to have Serra Ascendant. In terms of one drops that we can grab with our Ranger Captain of Eos, a potential 6/6 flying lifelink is a great way to protect Lavinia, because often the correct answer to a Stax deck is to just try to remove the Stax player as soon as possible. Let's see, what other good stuff do we want to run in this deck? I think we get on some more Drago counter, so let's get Delay in here. Let's get Counterspell in here. This deck in particular seems like it's a deck that really wants to reload his hand, so let's put in a Recurring Insight. This is a 6-mana spell, a sorcery for 4 blue-blue. Draw cards equal to the number of cards in target opponent's hand and then rebound, which means you exile it after the spell resolves, and you then at the beginning of your next upkeep, you cast it from exile for free, essentially giving you 2 chances to reload your hand. If we're going to be pitching a card to Dream Halls, if everything is going to plan, we are going to run out of cards more quickly than if we were just paying mana for it. So big draw spells like Recurring Insight could be a powerful way for us to close out, or at least close back up with our opponents who are holding more cards in hand. On that note, for now, I'm going to put Windfall in. I'm not sure it's correct yet, and I'll throw Time Twister in as well. I definitely don't own a Time Twister, and looking at that price tag, I never will. So one thing I try to do for myself is I will put in one of the Magic Online versions that don't actually exist in paper, just to remind myself that that is not a card I look to own. Proxy is not a dirty word, kids. Please make use of it. Some of the other cards that I'm looking to take advantage of here, having seen the Marquesa finals and the pods leading up to the finals, this was a big CEDH tournament from, at the time of release of this episode, about a week and a half beforehand, where there were several very good games that Charles, the mono white guy, had taken with a old-fashioned Heliod God of the Sun deck. That's not the Heliod Sun Crowned combined with Walking Ballista combo deck. Instead, it was more of an old-school mono white stacks list that attempted to just layer many, many types of stacks and lots of interaction in order to grind out victory over his opponents. One card that he added, which I'm actually a big fan of, and I had mentioned before that I wanted to include lots of enchantments for, is Catilda Dawnheart Martyr. This is a 3-mana, 1-white, legendary creature spirit warlock with flying, lifelink, and protection from vampires. Catilda's power and toughness are each equal to the number of permanents you control that are spirits and or enchantments. She has a disturbed cross of 3 white-white, and when we transform and disturb her, she is an enchantment, which gives enchanted creature flying, lifelink, protection from vampires, and plus X, where X is the number of permanents you control that are spirits and or enchantments. And then the standard disturb clause of, if it would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. I think this could be a nice way to, number one, protect the fragility of our deck. Being able to throw this on one of our creatures as an enchantment or just cast it gives us a potentially powerful beater who would also allow us to maintain a healthy life total, removing one option for our opponents who may be trying to remove our stack's effects by just beating us the old-fashioned way to death. The other piece that Charles had said and the post-game talks that he had done was that he built the Heliod deck with the idea that you are playing a deck that is just going to be heavy, heavy, heavy interaction. If we're talking old-fashioned limited theory, then it's just cards that affect the board constantly. everything he did had the opportunity to foil the plans of his opponents. So I really want to be heavy on interaction here. So let's take a look again at what other kind of cards were missing from the Omen pool list. Force of Will, Force of Negation, Flusterstorm, Fierce Guardianship. Yeah, I think this is going to be a deck that's going to run Dispel, a single blue mana to counter target instant spell. Mindbreak Trap is also a very clutch card that I'd be interested in trying out. If an opponent casts three or more cards this turn, you may pay zero rather than play Mindbreak Trap's mana cost, and you exile any number of target cards. Muddle the Mixture is a nice tutor that we can potentially run that also acts as a counter spell. This is Sunder to return all lands to their opponent's hands. Now that is a potentially brutal card with Lavinia. This is the reason why you always check the database list, because they have often tread a lot of that ground. Looking at other cards the deck is running that we don't have yet, I think that Smothering Tide is definitely a strong include in this deck. Dress Down as a way to shut down opposing creatures seems pretty darn sweet. Swift Reconfiguration as a way to essentially protect your own bears is powerful. It is difficult to remove a vehicle in CDH. We can probably hold up for a long time if we put one of those under a Swift Reconfiguration. And I probably should ask Callahan and Phoenix about the restoration of... oh, I can't pronounce that. Iganjo. Let's say the restoration of Iganjo. Chapter 1 for this 3 mana saga is search your library for a basic plains card, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle. Chapter 2, you may discard a card. When you do, return target permanent card with mana value 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And chapter 3 is exile the saga, then return it to the battlefield transformed under your control. And on the backside, we have a 3-4 with vigilance, which whenever Architect of Restoration attacks your blocks, create a 1-1 colorless spirit creature token. So there's some potentially neat stuff there. It looks like the database list is also running a few pieces that we are not on yet. So Aven Mind Sensor should be going in. Skyclave Apparition is really good. It should be going in. Sanctifier Envek. I think this deck does do Sanctifier Envek and probably also... I think we put Grafdigger's Cage and we put Rest in Peace in there as well. Recruiter of the Guard is another tutor effect that can get us to our Moonblessed Cleric. It can get us to Spellseeker. It can get us to a lot of potential things. And I think we run a little bit deeper into the Mono White Stax Bears effects as well. So let's start putting some of these in here. Sanctifier Envek. Rest in peace. Grafdigger's Cage is going in. Let's run Aven Mind Sensor. Let's Dress Down. Let's put in Smothering Tithe. Another card that Charles had used to great effect in his Heliod deck, once he slowed the game down, was Luminarch Ascension. So Luminarch Ascension is a Commander all-star from the early days of the format. One and a white for an enchantment at the beginning of each opponent's end step. If you didn't lose life this turn, you may put a quest counter on Luminarch Ascension. Then one and a white, create a 4-4 white angel creature token of the flying, only if there are four or more quest counters on Luminarch Ascension. In a draw-go style control deck, this could be a potent way for us to close out the game. I also want to be on... more interaction. more interaction. So we said we're going to be on Dispel. We're going to be on... Mana Drain. March of Swirling Mist from the most recent Kamigawa set is blue X for an instant. As an additional cost, you may exile any number of blue cards from your hand. This spell costs 2 less to cast for each spell exiled this way. Up to X target creatures phase out. A good way to go for it and remove troublesome pieces that are stopping you while also inhibiting your opponents. At the same time, if you remove them and then you do fail to go for it, it's not a big deal because you just kind of come back and let them phase back in when you fail to go for it. So it's a less devastating way for you to go for it and potentially open the door for your opponent is what I'm trying to say. Mental Misstep, Mana Drain. Put in Marsh of Swirling Mist. Let's take another look at the database list. Transmute Artifact is really important in the database version of the deck because it is trying to land Omen Machine as soon as possible. Don't necessarily think that's what our deck is going to try to do. Search for Glory lets us get a legendary card out of our deck that does not get the Dream Halls, but it does let us get a lot of other powerful things, including Urza's Saga. Urza's Saga is an enchantment, it is a land, it is a saga, and we can get it because Search for Glory gets us a snow permanent, a saga, or a legendary permanent. So I think Search for Glory is going to go into the deck. Mystical Tutor is going to go into the deck. I'm not sure about Solve the Equation. Maybe. The database version of the deck also ran two of the Zendikar Rising Modal Double Face cards. They ran Seagate Restoration and Myria's Call. So these are two big mana sorceries. The white one is 4 white white for a sorcery. Create 2 4/4 white angel warrior creature tokens with flying. Non-angel creatures you control gain indestructible until your next turn. And then Seagate Restoration is 4 blue blue blue. For a sorcery, draw cards equal to the number of cards in your hand plus 1. You have no maximum hand size for the rest of the game. On the backside, both of these cards are the same. You can play them for a land that taps for a single color, but you shock yourself for 3 points of damage when they come into play. I'm going to start filling out our mana ramp suite now, so we're going to want a Mox Diamond. We're playing CEDH. We're playing the big boys. We're going to want a Lotus Petal. We want a Mana Crypt. We want a Soul Ring. Solemn Offering, you're not wanted here. Rules Committee banned Solemn Offering, so I stop accidentally clicking on it. We're going to want Chromox. We're going to want Arcane Signet. Talisman of Progress? Yes, Talisman of Progress. That's the Azorius one. Is the database list running Azorius Signet? It is. Okay. Jeweled Lotus, I nearly forgot about. Mana Vault, I nearly forgot about. Lavinia is going to be cheap enough that Mox Amber should consistently get us mana. So Mox Amber, Azorius Signet, and Mana Vault. And that should get us a pretty solid white border. No, you get out of here. Black border, please. That's better. Whew. So at this point, we have a list that's pretty filled out. I am pretty bad at creating mana bases. So let's just throw in what I know. We got Tundra. We're probably going to need to make some cuts to this in order to get our lands in here. And I think that's going to be something I'm going to do off camera later. We're going to run City of Brass, we're going to run Mana Confluence, we're going to be on Hallowed Fountain. Let's see here. obviously going to be on Flooded Strand, anything that gets us blue, so Scalding Tarn. We're going to be on Misty, Rainforest, and we're going to be on Polluted Delta. For white, we'll go Arid Mesa. We need to be on Marsh Flats and Windswept Heath. We probably want to run both of the channel lands from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. So that is Otawara. And Seat of the Empire, Igando. So this one is the channel land that taps for white. Channels for 2 and a white, discard it to deal 4 damage, target attacking your blocking creature, costing 1 less for each legendary creature we control. And Otawara is one I really like. It is blue, channels for 3 and a blue, costing 1 less for each legendary creature you control. Discard it, return target artifact, creature, enchantment, or planeswalker to its opponent's hand. So both of those are really, really, really sweet. We're going to try to finish this up here. Let's get on Prismatic Vista. Let's get on Sea of Clouds. Let's get on Cavern of Souls and Cephalad Coliseum. We're going to be on a Pain Land of Darkar Waste. Ancient Tomb. I don't think this list wants City of Traders. I think your very specialized lists are the only ones that are really going to be running that, and I don't think this is going to be one of those decks. Inventor's Fair? I think Inventor's Fair is worth it. I don't think this is going to run Spire of Industry. I don't think we can consistently get mana off of it that we want. Cephalid Coliseum. We need 9 more cards here. As you can see, this is kind of where I wind up. I wind up having the opposite problem. I very rarely need cuts. I usually just wind up making them. So the database list is on War Room, which I am really interested in. It's a way to draw some additional cards without much cost. We also saw that the database list is going to be on Hengegate Pathway. I forgot Gemstone Caverns. Hengegate Pathway is one of the pathway lands from Kaldheim that's going to be white, essentially a white mana source on one side and blue on the other. Not ideal, but when you're in two colors, sometimes it's what you gotta do. We're going to be running 3 more. Looking at our mana balance on Moxfield, we're pretty close with a slight preference for white mana. We're going to want to take advantage of the fact that we're on Search for Glory with some Snowlands. So we're going to run both, a Snow-Covered Island and Snow-Covered Plains. I'll probably do 2 of each. And let's put in a regular Island and Plains. All right, I don't think we're quite where we want to be in terms of lands. It looks like the database list is running 27. I'm not sure. I'm going to want to come back to it because there are some other cards that I'd like to try to include into this deck as potential win cons. So let me just very quickly add here the other card that I'm interested in. Hallowed Haunting is a powerhouse. This is 2 and 2 white for an enchantment. As long as you control 7 or more enchantments, creatures you control have flying and vigilance, and whenever you cast an enchantment spell, create a white spirit creature. Create a white spirit cleric creature token with this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of spirits you control. So they very quickly get powerful and out of hand. On that note, a couple of the cards that I forgot to include here. Spirit of the Labyrinth, which is an enchantment creature. This may not wind up being something we wind up including because, well, it's a spirit and it's an enchantment, which would help us out with our Katilda cost later. We are in blue. We want to be able to draw cards, so I think I'm actually going to put that just in the considering board for now. And the other one is Eidolon of Rhetoric, which is our other rule of law that I forgot about. So that means two cuts here. I think I am going to cut Gitaxian Probe, move it to considering. And then from our creature suite, it's probably Nezahal is what I should cut, but I want to have a couple of payoff pieces that I can take advantage of later. So for now, let's cut Windfall from the deck. And we're at 100 cards. So it looks like that took me about 35 to 40 minutes to actually brew, which is nowhere near the 10 minutes that someone like Rebel did, or just the handful of like 15 to 20 minutes that MJ and his guests on MTG and Quarantine are able to do. But that is a land speed record for me. So I hope you enjoyed watching me obsessively switch printing on cards to make sure that everything is black bordered. But also obsessively note that I'm not going to replace the white bordered Tundra with one that is black bordered. I don't know how my brain works sometimes, but I hope you all enjoyed this. This was a good exercise. I'm going to try to goldfish this deck a handful of times, see if this actually has any legs. But this is how I brew decks. I usually don't wind up going to 200 cards or 150 cards and then needing to cut things down. In most cases, I'm struggling to get back up to those full 100 card decks. And I find that checking the database on the CDH deck list database, if you're trying to build for that kind of environment, is a really good resource. I'm still missing a few things that I would really like to be running in the deck. Like, I want to find room, I think, for the Heliod's Intervention. I want to find room for Dig Through Time. I would like to find room for Treasure Cruise, just as a few other powerful ways for me to refill my hand and get some advantage over my opponents. Sunder is a house in a Lavinia deck, and I'd like to try that out. These Planeswalkers, especially the two Karns, are especially potent in a Stax game plan, particularly when we can protect them. So this still needs some work, but yeah, thanks for joining me. And if you want to give us some feedback, let us know. On YouTube, we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. You can add us on Twitter, where we are at GemstoneMineMTG, or you can email us at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.